Hello and a warm welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Chunya podcast. Wherever you are, hope you are doing well. Take care of yourself and if possible, someone else too. This podcast episode couldn't be coming at a more appropriate time, as the last few months have been around the build-up to the COP26 in Glasgow. One of the major objectives from the conference is around the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and to get to net zero by the middle of the century. The intent is that we get below the 1.5 degrees C target set by the Paris Climate Agreement. In case you missed out the previous episode about COP26, you can check the archives in your playlist. And when we talk about emissions by sector, sectors like energy and transportation come out on top because they are clearly visible. But experts will point out that nearly one-fourth of the emissions come from food production. It includes everything like farming, dairy, and meat production. In fact, dairy and meat account for nearly 15% of the emissions. So, on this episode, we return to a topic that we had discussed very early on in the channel around meat alternatives. This week, the conversation features a company whose work began as a passion project but soon turned out to be addressing not one but two important goals: health of humankind and the health of our planet. So, who is our guest and which is that brand that is making plant-based meat consumption very desirable?
So, this is Todd Boyman. I am the co-founder and CEO of Hungry Planet. I'm delighted to be on this podcast today to share a little bit more about the mission of Hungry Planet, which is to bend the curve on personal and planetary health using absolutely delicious, chef-crafted plant-based meats.
Todd, I have followed Hungry Planet for a bit now. Before we get into the origins of that, let us listen to your background. Has your background been in the food tech or did you eventually end up here?
Yeah, my background has been in conventional tech. So working with Bits and Bytes, doing enterprise chain software solutions for multi-billion dollar corporations, some direct-to-consumer solutions. But I've always been a tech entrepreneur and a tech investor. But at my heart, I have eaten plant-based. My sister, who's a co-founder of Hungry Planet, has eaten plant-based for about 45 years. I've eaten plant-based for about 35 years. So it's been a passion of, you know, helping to look at food systems and why people would choose to eat differently. But Hungry Planet as a business really sprung from a passion and not kind of a long-term vision of wanting to be in the food business.
That's an interesting story. You had some background in tech and then you had interest and it's eventually evolved. So what's the origin story of Hungry Planet like? I'm sure it must have taken a lot of research, although you do mention that you started plant-based nutrition slowly, but eventually got on to building a business. But I'm sure there's a lot of research that's gone into before you conceptualize the actual brand that it is today.
Yeah, the origin really does start with both Jody and I making the decision very intentionally so to eat plant-based decades ago and having a deep understanding of the science behind how our food choices directly impact the world that we live in, the environment, the health of our human bodies, right, as well as the impact that it has on animals. So that's really the genesis of what has become Hungry Planet. With the research and development that went into trying to figure out, well, how do we replicate the food that so many people love to eat, which is meat, rather than trying to convince people just to eat veggies and eat lower on the food chain. Kind of the eureka moment was when we worked with some like-minded individuals and the idea started to formulate about 20 years ago of, can we replicate conventional meat using the exact same plant proteins that animals ingest and then convert into meat? And can you do that same thing without using the services of animals? So can you take those exact same proteins? Can you transform those into conventional meat? So that was really the genesis of all this. All started about 20 years ago. It started as a passion project being funded by Jody, me, and like-minded investors during that time period. And then ultimately realizing that, yeah, we could deliver on this. The food was absolutely fantastic. And then it was a question of how do we develop the market so that there'd be demand for what was being created. And so that's, you know, largely what's been going on over the past 6 years or so.
That's interesting. And it's really interesting to know that's close to 20 years of work has gone behind this, the brand that it is today. I really like the vision that you have, health of humankind and health of planet. So it clearly resonates with both. And most importantly, you did mention the impact of meat consumption. That is the biggest problem you're trying to address, right?
That is. I mean, our mission very clearly stated is to bend the curve, personal and planetary health. And so full stop, that's the focus of the business. And we do that through creating chef-crafted premium plant-based meats that are a perfect one-to-one substitution for their conventional animal. And we do that across all types of meats. So rather than just looking at one type of meat, we look at all the different types of meats. So yeah, the focus of this business is to make a difference on this planet, to make sure that the health of the planet regenerates and heals, the health of humans' personal health improves. And as you do that, you can't help but improve the welfare for animals, where 80 billion animals a year are produced and killed for purposes of food. And so you're also just creating, quite frankly, a kinder planet and developing better food. So the focus is on upgrading meat, making it directly from plants, making a difference to human, planetary, and animal welfare, and doing that all at the same time. And it's interesting in this plant-based space because there's a lot of talk about this right now.
Correct.
And so much of the focus is on, you know, how it improves the planet. And then people will talk a little bit about improving personal health. But more often than not, a lot of the companies that are, you know, jumping into this space because they see that it's now, you know, suddenly hot, aren't actually creating plant-based meats that have a healthful profile. Sure, they don't have antibiotics in it. Yes, they don't have cholesterol, but they often do have trans fats in it. They often have excessive sodium. They often have things in there that aren't as healthful as they can be and as they should be. So our firm conviction is that one of the design principles in plant-based meats needs to be that, yes, they're better for the planet because they're taking these plant proteins and transforming them into meats without the services of animals. So if you understand the science, clearly that's better for the planet. But you've really got to deliver on that brand promise of being better for people, because that's equally important, is that we've got to make sure that we're addressing obesities, different types of cancer, diabetes, that are the outcome of eating poorly and eating, in many cases, way too much conventional meat.
Being better for people is something that is kind of overshadowed by the objective of being better for the planet. In generally, as you said, among the market leaders in this space, plant-based meat. Interestingly, to make it better, you also have a different brand proposition that you call the range of products that you offer, chef-crafted. So how did this come about?
Well, it came about, we have a really accomplished culinary team, and we've always looked at this through the lens of chefs. So, you know, chefs have driven our research and development. They've driven how we have thought about what is acceptable, right? What really hits the mark. And when you're working with chefs, particularly very accomplished chefs, they aren't looking to just be wowed by new technologies or new foods. They're looking for good food. And as our chief culinary officer, Ron DeSantis, says, and Ron is a certified master chef, of which there are 62 certified master chefs, right? So that's the highest designation you can have. And, you know, he says with a smile, you know, there are really only two types of food. There's good food and there's bad food. And so if you want to make sure that you're in that first bucket and that you've got good food, you've got to make sure that the taste and texture is fantastic. You've got to make sure that chefs and consumers can work with it. So does it handle, cook, prepare, store like conventional meat? But then you've also got to make sure that you are delivering on that promise that when somebody hears plant-based, they are inferring that that product is going to be better for them. And so it's really disingenuous to come out with a product that isn't delivering on that promise. And our chefs have been absolutely adamant, good food and bad food. And good food isn't just about taste and texture, but it also should be better for you. And so everything that we've done has been making sure that we are truly delivering good food in every way that you can define that term.
Well, I'm actually a little surprised and a little happy that you have MasterChef people in that caliber actually working on this, and they are actually really interested to contribute to this in a long term. So that's really fantastic. Now, talking of good food, the food that tastes good, I'm sure it must have taken a lot of research, but your intent to offer a range of products while the other market players are kind of focusing on one or two products. Why did you intend to do this, offer a range of meat alternatives?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I think it really comes back to the global perspective that we had when we looked at how do we make a difference? How do we bend the curve on personal and planetary health? And when you do that, you define the opportunity, you define the challenge globally. You don't look at it through the lens of one market or another. And when you look at this opportunity globally, and you look at it from day one globally, you realize that, yes, it's a huge market. I mean, globally, the conventional meat market is about $2.4 trillion, right? So that's a massive industry. But then when you start peeling down the layers, you understand that it falls into lots of different buckets depending on what geographies you're looking at. And globally, the most consumed meat on the planet is pork, and then chicken, and then beef. And then you have things like lamb and turkey and duck. And then you also have the aquatic animals like crab and tuna, all of which need to be considered. And so we really had the luxury, because we started working on this so far in advance of anybody even thinking about this might be an interesting problem or market opportunity to go after, that we said, look, we want to bend the curve on personal and planetary health. That means looking at the entire market. And that means trying to figure out how do you replicate all of these different meat types. And while people might choose to initially focus on one or another, if they are constrained by either investment dollars or time, and they're in a hurry to get to the market, you could prioritize beef, perhaps, if you're looking just at the United States or first at the United States, and you're trying to address the type of meat that perhaps has the most negative impact on the environment, you might look at beef. If you're looking at where the most meat is consumed, well, then you may look at pork. But then if you're looking at the number of animal lives, you'd be looking at chicken, right? Because there are a lot more chickens that are raised and killed than there are beef cattle. So there are a lot of reasons why somebody may prioritize one or another, but we truly had the luxury of looking at this globally from day one, having a team that started to look at this over 20 years ago and saying, you know what, we want to do all of this. We want to do all of the above. And because we defined the problem, we defined the opportunity through that lens, that then largely dictates where we ended up today, which is the first company globally to have all 9 different protein types. So beef, chicken, pork, lamb, turkey, crab, etc. And not only to have 9, which no one else has, but to have done all of those with a healthful profile so that when people are consuming these, they really are getting what they expect from plant-based, which is a better-for-you product. So that's kind of, how we defined it, why we defined it, and therefore why we are uniquely where we are today in a wonderful position now to be rolling out and introducing to markets around the world what it is that we've been working on so long and that really originated from a deep passion about how can we make a difference.
Todd, at this point, I have a question that could be a little technical, but when you have this 9 varieties of plant-based meat from different protein sources, is there any difference in the way you get this done in terms of that, how you process it, how you process and make this a product, finished product? Is there any technical difference between how, or is it the same process for all protein types?
So there are multiple ways that people could choose to solve for these different meat types. And it is a fundamental question that you're getting at in terms of how a company in this space would scale. So there are some companies in this space that have raised billions of dollars that really start off trying to solve just a single item, beef and burgers, for example.
Correct.
And, it's been well publicized that, one of those leading companies, it took them 5-6 years to figure out how to create their first type of meat. And they report it was $150 million to figure out how to create their first beef product. And it's been 3.5 years since coming out with that product that then they have launched their subsequent products, or at least have announced the launch of their subsequent products. And that's largely because they were focused on a single product as what they were getting to market with, and they were trying to do it in a compressed amount of time. They didn't have the luxury of 20 years like the team at Hungry Planet has.
Correct.
Because we defined the problem differently and we had the luxury of time and the luxury of being self-funded, we didn't have investors pushing us to get something to market before it was ready, nor trying to get something to market before the market was ready for what we were doing, right? You can be too early with a right idea. But we architected our plant protein platform such that we could very rapidly develop all types of meat proteins and not have to reinvest the same amounts over and over again. And that really came from, you know, my background as a software person and understanding that when you're solving big, complex software problems and you're architecting the platform to do that, you don't just architect it for the problem that's immediately ahead of you today, but you architect it thinking holistically about where that space is going to evolve. Because if you define it as solving problem A and you platform for problem A, great, you've solved problem A really elegantly, but you haven't really thought about, well, what are the tangential problems B, C, D, E, and F that are coming down the pike that people are going to want to have solved because you solved problem A so well? And so just like in software, unless you're thinking about that from day one, what happens is that you solve that first problem. Hopefully you've solved it really well, but you've shoehorned yourself into this platform that only solved that problem so that when you then want to solve the tangential problems, the tangential opportunities, just like with meat, you go after beef first, but then it's pretty obvious that you're going to want chicken and pork fairly soon thereafter, and then turkey, lamb, crab, etc. Unless you've developed a platform that will support all those types, just like in software, you're going to need to replatform, and that's going to introduce enormous time, cost, risk, and energy into the equation. So we just thought about it differently. So we can power all of our plant proteins from a common plant protein platform that we've thought through and very intelligently designed that then lets us create other plant proteins on top of that and iterate very, very rapidly. So it all comes back to, again, how we defined this opportunity, the fact that we had time and we had the money to do this in a way that was fundamentally different from the way a lot of people today are jumping in trying to figure this out.
Well, a platform approach for this is very unique in its way, and I should appreciate that. It's kind of helped you scale, just like how platforms help software to scale and deliver solutions globally. I think this is kind of positioned you to kind of offer solutions globally. Talking of platforms and products, one key thing in this is taste. I have read a lot about research, but of course, I have to admit that I have not tasted plant-based meat. But how long did you take to have this taste trials going around? It's good to know that you had like a range of chefs who were very good at it. But what was the feedback from the general public when you launched it in the market for the first time?
Well, the first time, I mean, we've been in the market in a very quiet way without branding it. And in the market for us was really working with chefs and not so much working with consumers. So we really started in the food service area because it allowed us to iterate very rapidly. Because once you put things on shelf at grocery, there are resets. It's a very different market to be working in. So we intentionally chose to focus on working in food service and working with chefs because we could iterate very rapidly, and chefs aren't predisposed to wanting to be wowed by the latest technology. They're simply looking for fantastic food that's going to deliver and that their customers are going to love. And they're also going to provide you very candid feedback. So that's really where we were in market first, if you will. And the early days of the discussion was, well, okay, well, this is kind of interesting. Why should I be interested in this? And who's going to be demanding this when they come into my restaurant? And the food was always pretty good. It's gotten better and better as the years have gone on. But initially it was always, well, who's going to want this and why? And then how do I use it? And for that question of how do we use it, even today, we'll get that question because of the range that we have. And when we describe to culinarians that you can use it as a one-to-one replacement for the conventional analog, they're like, okay, got it. And then once we do all that, we give them a chub of our mince of whatever type. They kind of freeze. They're like, okay, so now, you know, really, what do I do with this? And our chefs start working with them and say, well, great, you know, let's make a curry out of it. Let's do a lamb kofta. Let's do a shepherd's pie. Let's do, you know, whatever culinary tradition they're working in. Let's take your most popular item and recreate that, simply incorporating Hungry Planet meats into that. And within a minute or two of doing that and having their hands on the meat, they're like, oh, I've got it. You know, basically leave me alone. I now know what to do. It handles like, it prepares like, it cooks like, it stores like conventional meat. And sometimes people just need to start working with it before it really sinks in that those aren't just buzzwords, but truly that's how you use Hungry Planet meats.
You did mention about putting it out in the retail area where people kind of buy. Now, when you get into this kind of market, there is one big challenge is the supply chain side of things. How did you work around that? Because traditional food chain has its own supply chain in place. But how did you work around this?
Yeah, the food chain is really unique. And particularly when you're working with product that needs to be frozen or refrigerated, managing the cold chain requires a huge degree of expertise. And clearly, those cold chains are different around the world, you know, different temperatures, correct, different parties that are involved. So, you know, candidly, we took a lot of time to study and understand that market. We hired the right people who came in and who had deep expertise in how do you do distribution. So we've done that in the United States. We right now have people in the Middle East preparing the cold chain there so we can launch our food in the Middle East. We're doing the same in Singapore for Southeast Asia. So, you know, really, it's not that we're inventing anything new, because we were very intentional about making sure that all of our food could move through the supply chain in the same way as conventional meat. It's really about, you know, me as a co-founder and CEO of the business, and Jody, my sister, co-founder of the business, figuring out what we didn't know and finding people who could come in and really support what we were doing and bring that level of expertise to the equation.
That's interesting. That's interesting to know that you have worked around this and you're ensuring that you're using this existing supply chain kind of to modify and kind of adopt and offer this thing. Now, you also talk about this in your, I mean, firstly, congratulations on your recent Series A, and related to that, fundraise and other activities, you do mention and talk a lot about the reduced resource use in the process that you have from plant to plate. So how do you quantify that in comparison to the other alternatives?
Yeah, we do talk about, you know, how efficient it is to go with plant-based meats from basically plant to plate and how that transforms. I think when you look at that through the lens of conventional meat, a lot of people are now familiar with kind of how efficient animals are in converting plant proteins to meat. The least efficient, obviously, are beef, which, you know, it's a 25-to-1 conversion loss, meaning that you're taking, you know, 25 calories of plant protein to create 1 calorie of beef protein. So that's just hugely inefficient. And the way to kind of visualize that is if you're sitting down for a family dinner or a community dinner or a dinner at your company, and someone is putting down 25 plates of perfectly good food, and before you start eating, say, well, you know what, now we're going to take away 24 of those and throw those in the dumpster, and let's all share one, you know, you would have a riot, right? I mean, everyone would be like, wow, that's a 96% loss before we've taken our first bite.
True.
Whose decision was it to throw away those 24 plates of perfectly good food? And while I understand India, you know, not a place where a lot of beef is consumed, you know, in the rest of the world, that's an enormous amount of waste. And so with plants, you don't have that, right? I mean, you're taking those calories and very efficiently transforming those into meat. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, a simple illustration of why going from plant to plate using plant-based meats is so efficient, because globally it scales. And just on the point of kind of globally, why this is important and what we're doing to make this accessible globally is that by offering 9 different types of meat proteins through the Hungry Planet system, it lets us work in any type of cuisine, regardless of whether they consume chicken or pork or beef or lamb. You know, it's all available and it works in any cuisine. And our team has gone to lengths on our website, which is hungryplanetfoods.com. We have sections there where we have recipes covering all cuisines all over the world. So as we start introducing our foods globally, and people are really intrigued about, well, what do I do with it? How do I work with it? Whether you are a professional chef, whether you're in the food service industry, or whether you're a consumer, we're making it really easy for people to enjoy the same meals that they've always enjoyed in the cuisines that they enjoy the most, and providing recipes out there, video tips, handling tips, and making it easy for people to onboard so that they can eat lighter on the planet, right? So that they can go from plant to plate and be a part of that movement that is really starting to sweep the world as more and more people are aware of the impact of conventional meat on our planet, on human health, on the welfare of animals. And then when they can experience simply, authentically delicious foods that are truly good for you, demonstrably good for you, and they understand that Hungry Planet is doing all that, that's when kind of the magic happens. And so, you know, we're eager to be a part of that and being, in many cases, people's first experience with plant-based meats.
It's actually quite a surprise for me that, you know, the traditional meat industry kind of has that amount of inefficiency in the system. So I'm sure when this message is conveyed in a right manner, I mean, there'll be even more adoption.
Yeah, so, you know, just on that point about the inefficiencies of the conventional meat industry, part of the reason why that industry has been able to get away with that is because of the subsidies that go into supporting the conventional meat industry. And historically, that was done because no one really was thinking about, well, how could we do this more efficiently doing it from plants? And so at least in the United States, those lobbies, those industries were saying, look, let's give more people conventional meat less expensively, and successfully lobbied for all sorts of subsidies to artificially reduce the price. And as often happens, right, when there are government subsidies, it drives behavior that if traditional economics, the invisible hand, isn't working, you're going to have more and more people consuming things that are subsidized. And so our hope is that over time that will change and that people will say, okay, there is now a very good alternative. In fact, it's an upgrade to conventional meat. And so why are we subsidizing something that is bad for our planet, bad for our health, inhumane for the animals, when there is an upgrade alternative that over time will be less expensive and yet out of the gates, certainly much better for human health and for planetary health? So a lot of that comes down to economic incentives, where the incentives historically have been. And I think with time, that will start to shift now that they're all alternatives.
The point around subsidies kind of leads me to my next question. The very important question when you release a new alternative product to the market, it happens to be around price. So what's your current situation in terms of price? Are you competitively priced? And generally, when a new technology comes, you also expect that prices to go down when there is a system in place, when the scale is there for the market. So where do you see that going?
Yeah, price parity is something that this industry is talking a lot about. And I think everybody who's involved understands that the time that we really become ubiquitous will be the time at which we can offer price parity or better with conventional meat. So we can deliver an upgrade to conventional meat today in terms of taste, texture, health. But until you can get the price, there's a limit to how large you can grow the market. and how ubiquitous you can come in where you can access these foods. So in our case, when we talk about price parity, we really have to thin slice that and look at that in terms of, well, what does that mean for beef? What does it mean for pork? What does it mean for chicken, turkey, lamb, crab, et cetera? So in the United States, as an example, because that's, you know, where we started, even though we are now selling our food in other international markets, you can get chicken, conventional chicken, for $1.50 a pound, right? Beef is going to be closer to $5.50, $6.50 a pound, depending on what type of beef you're getting. Is it free range? Is it organic, et cetera? And then you can take crab, and crab is going to be about $14 a pound. So when we look at the conventional alternatives, those are the targets, right? It's anywhere from $1.50 a pound for chicken to $14 a pound for crab.
Correct.
So our crab, our upgrade to conventional crab, is already available at a substantial reduction to conventional crab, right? So we are price parity and better, significantly so, than crab. Crab, however, is a fairly niche market, right? The volumes are not what they are with chicken, pork, and beef.
Correct.
We are close to what conventional beef is priced at, and with chicken, significantly above. And so when we think about this as a category, we really think about plant-based meats as the fifth protein, the fifth meat protein out there. And I think consumers are starting to look at that as well. So our target is to bring all of these down so that we are less than conventional beef. And if we can do that, and we can do that across the board with all of our plant proteins, we believe at that point, the adoption will happen even faster, because people will really be looking at this as a fifth protein type. It's plant-based and great. We've got plant-based now with chicken, beef, pork, crab, et cetera. And it's all going to be available at, you know, $4.50, $5.50 a pound. And we think that at that point, consumers will say, great, I can incorporate this in my diet in even larger quantities than I can do right now. And we also believe that when it comes to food service, it will be more broadly available.
Wow. I actually kind of didn't expect this price parity trajectory that you have in place. So it's very promising. And I'm sure, like any technology wins, there is scale and there is everything that is set in place, like the supply chain. I'm sure the prices, as you project, can actually go down very significantly. And I think that in itself will push a certain amount of market to plant-based meat. So that's a big, big positive. Todd, on a final note, going back to your mission, vision, and running back to that and bending the curve on both person and planetary health. When you talk planet, I mean, you did mention the global market a couple of times in the conversation. So you have raised a Series A now. So what's your plan in having a bigger global impact in the years to come?
Yeah, our goal is to identify geographies where we feel that we can most readily make an impact, and to bring our foods to those geographies as rapidly as possible. So starting earlier this year was when we really started to take the covers off of what we've been developing here as a team for about 20 years. We realized that the food was ready. We built all the foundation so it was ready. We built out the supply chain. We hired the right team. We put everything in place so that we could be wildly successful. And we launched first here in the United States. We've been selling as what I would define as kind of a soft pilot in Australia for about 4 years. We've done some pilots in Singapore. We'll be launching soon in the Middle East. So we've really been focused on geographies and channels where we can make a difference and where our foods are uniquely qualified to be received by the market. So, you know, we are not a beef and burger company. We have amazing beef and burger, and people who are evaluating just that will often choose our solution. But where we can participate in global markets where there's an interest for lamb or pork or turkey or crab, or all of the above, and they want things that will really play well in their local cuisines, in any type of menu item. Those for us are really interesting markets, and in parts of the world where the environmental stress is particularly hard and where there isn't a lot of natural fresh water, so that you can't have herds of animals grazing without, you know, even greater damage to the environment. So that's what we're doing. We're looking for those markets where we can make the biggest impact as rapidly as possible. And with the foundation that we very patiently have been putting in place, we're eager to bring it to more and more people and delight people's taste buds. You know, coming back to the idea that, as our culinary team says, there are truly two types of food. There's good food and there's bad food. And what we've developed is really good food that will play in any cuisine, in any recipe, using a wide variety of meat types that will deliver demonstrably superior nutritional profiles. And for that, that's a really exciting place to be. And we love it when people discover what we're doing. Again, at our website, hungryplanetfoods.com, or on social media, our handle, whether it's on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn or Pinterest, is Hungry Planet Foods. And there people can see the images of the food. They can see what it is that we're doing to make a difference. And they can stay current with the rollout that we're having in these global markets. So, you know, that's where we're headed. And we are absolutely delighted with the progress that's been happening and the general awareness, thanks to people such as yourself who are helping to share the message about what is coming and what's possible today. It isn't a promise of what maybe theoretically is possible in the future. It's being delivered today. And it really now is just an issue of scaling this and getting it to more and more people as rapidly as possible.
Well, Todd, I must admit this finally. Like, ever since I heard about, I think it was around April, May, when the Series A round news was around and when I started following and looking at all the menu options that you have, I prefer only plant-based meat, plant-based food. And when I look at all the plant-based meat alternatives, I was actually, in fact, tempted to kind of say like, wow, I should get hold of this at one point in time, at some point in time. So I really look forward personally as a fan of this kind of thing. And having listened to the story of how this came about, the 20 years of work and the science behind it, is even more convincing for me to get my hands on this at the earliest. So I really look forward for your launch in India market as well. So it's been a wonderful conversation. I will definitely put across all the links to your website, hungryplanetfoods.com, and the social media links so that listeners can directly go there, follow your social media post, and maybe even like just like me, anticipate getting hold of your products soon when you get into the markets.
Fantastic. No, I appreciate it. Thank you for your interest. And you know, people, we all eat with our eyes first. So when people can kind of see firsthand what the food looks like and can see it in their favorite recipes, it helps make all this more real and kind of come alive. So I appreciate the time with you today. Thank you for your interest and for all that you're doing to help bring the message of planetary and personal wellness to your audience. So thank you.
That is a wrap on a feature segment. I am sure, just like me, you are really interested to get your hands on one of the chef-crafted plant-based meat. Well, the Hungry Planet story is very unique. A company that started off as a passion project, crafting plant-based meats by involving the best chefs in the industry, and today it is well-positioned to take on the global market. Such a development is very essential to get the message across to a wider global audience who still remain skeptical with the idea of good quality plant-based meat. You can connect with Todd and the Hungry Planet team across social media channels. They are very active, sharing the latest food innovations, if I were to put it that way. The links, as usual, will be in the show notes section. I will be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.